Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. Joining him is everyone's favorite coach and hair model, Chris, aka Tex McQuilkin, Power Athlete's Director of Performance. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
Welcome to a special episode of Power Athlete Radio, episode number 700.
10 years.
10 years.
We did it.
Well, we're good at beating a dead horse.
To death.
I'm amazed that we're able to do 70 episodes on average a year. I mean, I know there was a while there where we're doing one episode, then we started doing three, but it actually averages out to about 70 a year over 10 years.
Oh, yeah. A lot of awesome guests, a lot of questions into the hotline. That we were able to accomplish a lot and a lot of lessons learned.
Yeah. So in 2013, I wrote a blog post on Talk to Me Johnny that was called 42 things, or it was called Lessons Learned, 42 things I learned leading up to 2013. And every year since then, I've gotten an email from somebody asking if I would do a reboot. And I have done some minor reboots and some other kind of deviations of it, but I never really sat down and put together another 40 plus things. And instead of just rebooting the other ones, I decided to sit down and write a whole new list. And I think there's about 40, 41, 42 right in there. And it's just things that I was periodically throughout the year I thought were good. Some of them are quotes. Some of them are personal mantras. Some of them are just interesting things about training that I picked up and that I really have learned over the last plus 10 years that to stand on. So ready to go through?
Let's do it.
All right. Cool. How many do you want to get through? You want to get through them all?
Well, let's see how far we get.
Okay.
In our time allotted here, but
I'm in on that. All right. So JW's lesson learned 10 years later. Number one, animal-based protein is the foundation of any training plan that is looking to improve strength and or body composition.
Yeah, with a capital A on the animal. It's been very interesting over the last 10 years. This whole goo created fake meat lab chemistry. So I'm glad you brought the animal, capital A,
yep,
back.
There was an interesting piece of research recently where they were looking at animal-based proteins in relation to vegan proteins in terms of muscle building. When nutrient density was equated, and both groups were given copious amounts of creatine and everything else was supplemented, like I think it was excess leucine, lysine, I mean, just a bunch of different stuff. So what they did is they over-supplemented, added creatine, and then basically looked at hypertrophy gains off of animal-based proteins versus plant-based proteins, and the results were not that much different. But the volume of protein that they had to give to equate out for nutrient density was dramatically higher. So it's just the fact that animal-based proteins are much more nutrient dense and contain all the things you need to build muscle.
And they taste better.
But if you were a vegan, per se, and you wanted to have vegan-based proteins, like a pea protein, which we know is extremely hard on the stomach, the volumes would have to be higher. You'd have to supplement with creatine and a bunch of other various, I guess, micronutrients to make up for it. So it was a pretty interesting piece of study. But, like, can you theoretically build muscle as a vegan? Yes, I believe that you can. Is it optimal? No. Is it the easiest, tastiest, best form of doing things? No. But theoretically, it's not like it can't not be done.
Yes. So it's an excellent way to lead off. And I think the consumers, based off some memes that I've seen and followed, consumers
are
agree
you
with
your nutritional advice from memes these days?
Well, when I see the empty store aisles during like winter storms, if you will,
yeah,
and then this whole block of Beyond Meat is just left.
I honestly don't think even the vegans want to eat the Beyond Meat. I think it's a way to try to like consume and pull, you know, maybe people that are carnivores, meat eaters, people that are, you know, obviously
on the fence.
Animals. Yeah. Maybe it's like, pulling at the heartstrings, like, oh, you can still eat meat and it doesn't have. But when you look at it, it's absolutely disgusting on how it's produced. And I don't think people want to eat that stuff.
No.
No. Like, nobody sits down to a Beyond Burger and goes, I'm so excited to eat this Beyond Burger.
No, South Park did an excellent thing. They took the There Will Be Blood, and instead of oil, they turned it into the goo that they make the Beyond Burgers with. It's awesome. It's a great episode.
South Park is... you know, when we were driving here yesterday, obviously we,
the travel story here.
Yeah.
This is
so
good.
We're trying to get to Columbus. We booked through Dallas, which is always a terrible deal. Every time I fly through Dallas, when it's important, they weather cancels the flight. I missed the Hall of Fame, Dick Vermeil's Hall of Fame because of it. We get there. They were late out of Austin. We get there. We miss our flight. And of course, every flight's booked. So they flew us to Cincinnati. We had to rent a car and drive the 90 minutes. So we actually listened to some pretty good podcasts on the way, and it's just, I think the Beyond stuff is like unbelievable, but I do appreciate South Park poking fun at them, because South Park is really like the last bastion of pointing the ridiculousness of the world. So on the podcast we were listening to, the one guy made a point that like how sad he is that Jon Stewart no longer does The Daily Show, because what South Park does for them, John Stewart did for politics in D.C. Politicians were afraid to do ridiculous stuff, or maybe if they did, they were going to get called out. And John Stewart was so great at it. And then he retired, and Trevor Noah came in with his woke agenda and just basically listened to whatever, you know, the networks wanted him to say and tanked it into nothing. And now that show doesn't exist anymore, which is a travesty, because when John Stewart was at the helm, it was awesome. And I would never say I'm a huge John Stewart fan and support everything, just like Bill Maher. I like a lot of Bill Maher stuff, and there's a lot of stuff I don't, but I appreciate the fact that they're saying it and that I get a chance to listen to it, have a laugh, and then see the ridiculousness on both sides.
Well, I'm glad that Comedy Central is eliminating it.
Well, Trevor Noah was terrible. And it was so preachy.
Yes, which awful. Leads us into number two. That's what I call a transition, John.
I like it. Okay. This is probably my most favorite line from Marcus Aurelius, and something that I read many, many years ago, and it wasn't until maybe a couple years ago that it kind of flew back in my face, especially when I was working on the Antiquity Talk for the collective we did last year. This one really popped up, and I ever since then, it's really been the when you look at my phone, it's the lock screen. I think about it all the time. Which is most of what we say and do is not essential. If you can eliminate it, you'll have more time and more tranquility. Ask yourself at every moment, is this necessary? So in my lock screen on my phone, it says, at this moment, is this necessary? And I use it to kind of gauge everything. Doesn't matter what it is, I think to myself, is this necessary? Like if I'm sitting there, like especially having to cut a bunch of oak trees that I've been having to do every weekend, I'll sit there and be like, is this necessary for me to go out there and do this? And if I don't, then I know it doesn't get done. So it's been a really interesting exercise for me within the Stoics, but one of the lines I love and use quite often. And then, all right, so then number three, if you don't make time to get in shape, time will shape you into something you aren't very happy with, or you aren't going to be very happy with. So that was just a
John you preparing Wellborn, for a high school reunion or something?
No, it's just like, man, like if you don't make time to get in shape, like, you know, time will make you into a shape that you aren't very pleased with. You know, the old joke of people are getting in shape. They're, you know,
round.
I'm working myself into shape. It just happens to be a good round shape or a good pear shape, which was a joke. But it's true. If you don't take time to get in shape and be fit, time will make you into something you're not very happy with and you're not going to be pleased with when you look in the mirror. And it's going to shorten your life. And, you know, at this point, you know, you can look at all of the things that are really kind of in the camp of like life extension. And there's only a few things. One of them is exercise. The other one's probably hyperbarics is the only other thing I've really seen. But, you know, maybe optimizing hormones and a few other things. But eating, you know, an ancestral diet, like I want to, one of the last ones is Dr. Michael Rose. You know, the idea of, you know, he talked about it AHS 2018. He was on Rob Wolf's podcast. But talking about as we age, we have to return back to our ancestral diet. So, but that was one. And I think I used that on one of my clients or one of the consults I did where I told them, man, if you don't make time to get in shape, shape's going to make you into, or time's going to make you into a bad shape. So I thought that was a good little one I wrote down. The next, or, and then the next one, this would be number four. Have a goal, any goal. It can be a training goal, trying to bench 300 pounds, conquer a tough mudder. I mean, I'm not necessarily a fan of running marathons, but like if a marathon is what you need to get up and get out and do something, you need a goal. I realized fairly recently that training without a goal is just, you know, kind of aimless wandering. It's kind of like, hey, I'm going to go out and travel. Where are you going to go? I don't know. I have no destination in place. And while I respect that on certain levels, if I'm going somewhere, I have a fine amount of time. I got a very small window. It's not like I have a, you know, time to be, you know, Kwon Jong Kain from Kung Fu where I can just wander.
Walk the earth, get in adventures, meet people.
I don't have time for that. So if you have limited time, you have to have a goal. And my wife was funny. She's like, you know, your birthday's coming up. Like, what would you want to do if you could do anything in the world? Is there anything that you would want to do for your birthday? And I told her, I was like, yes, my ideal birthday was to fly to Hawaii, forge a knife and a spear with Neil Kamamura from Forged and Fire, who's a buddy of ours that lives in Kona. Then take that knife, go kill an axis deer in Hawaii, and then use the spear to actually kill a pig, clean the pig, and then cook him in the ground that night and have an epic beach party for my birthday. So that would be my ideal birthday. And I don't know if I'm be able to make it happen, but that would be
well, not with that attitude.
No, well, it takes a lot of time and planning, and it's tough when you have a wife and three kids and a bunch of other stuff to do. But have a plan, like have a goal, something. You have to have a training goal, and if you don't have it, you're just going to wander. So have a goal. All right, for the next one, have a well-developed aerobic system. It's important for many reasons that go far beyond fitness influence droning on about cardio. As we age, you've heard me say it, a few things happen. We lose mitochondrial density. So we create an increased mitochondrial density by having a large aerobic base. We lose the ability to recruit motor units. So that's why we lift heavy weights. And as we age, man, that really developed aerobic system is extremely important for not only sleep, but recovery and all these other things that we're not going to have time to talk about today.
Yes. And over the past year, probably the training program that blew up the most was Grindstone.
Yeah.
Which implements weekly cardio sessions, speed, in a sense of moving the bar quickly.
Yep.
So all of these factors, all in that training program, powerathletehq.com/grindstone.
Yep. Then my next one, the greatest flex isn't owning a Lamborghini. The greatest flex is being too tall, too thick, or sorry. The greatest flex isn't owning a Lamborghini. The greatest flex isn't owning a Lamborghini. The greatest flex is being too tall and too thick to fit in said Lamborghini. Leave those piece of shit cars to YouTubers, short kings, and beta bitches.
I feel attacked.
I'm not attacking you. You don't have a Lambo. And you're not a beta bitch. And you're not a YouTuber.
I'm just a short king.
You might be a short king. But technically, I remember what it was like to be your height one day. So I, you know, that's why I sympathize with the short kings. I remember, but I do think it's funny. One of my teammates bought a Lambo and I couldn't even get in it. I couldn't even think my way into the car. And I just think it's hilarious when I see like Jake Paul and all these YouTubers driving Lambos and I'm like, God damn. And not realizing how small they are, you know, but So I thought that was just kind of funny, seeing as that on social media feels like, you know, the ultimate flex is a Lambo. I'm just not a Lambo guy. I'm more of a Porsche guy.
What? How much does that cost?
I don't know. Like a couple hundred thousand. Like, I mean, I bet you a used
buy a house.
A $125,000, maybe a new one's $300,000-$400,000. Like, I don't know what these people's finances are. I don't know how if they're leasing them. I don't know if they're going in and putting $5,000 down and paying $5,000 a month and living in an apartment. I don't really know, but I just think it's funny that the Lamborghini has become like the status symbol for these guys. And but I've never been a Lambo guy. Always, I would take a Porsche 911 twin turbo S any day of the week on that.
Yes.
So, all right. The healthiest people are those that can eat the most diverse diet. If you can only eat one food or choose to only eat one food, like the carnivore, just eating red meat, which I don't have a problem with if there's autoimmune issues, but if you're a healthy individual and you're naturally really narrowing your diet down to just focus on one food group, you're leaving a ton of health on the table, and we have bigger problems to adjust. You know, the idea of Roy G. Biv, eating with diversity, is a major indicator of health. So the healthiest people can eat the most diverse diet. So purposely narrowing the scope because of influencers or what's, you know, people are recommending, especially people that have autoimmune issues, isn't an intelligent approach.
Is there a possibility for them to back into a potential immune or a gut issue?
Yes.
If it's not required of their health to then eliminate everything, what happens when they come back to eating?
So the body's super interesting, right? Especially within the gut biome. If you don't necessarily consume the foods, you start losing the ability to digest them. So, I mean, some real issues. And we've seen when people naturally create a very narrow lane for their diet, I just think it ends up limiting their ability to digest those foods if they do go back, you know. But, you know, like look at Jordan Peterson and his daughter. Like they had severe autoimmune issues and a carnivore diet fixed them 100%. If you're using it to fix something, but just, you know, deciding you want to do the rich guys want to eat ribeyes for every meal diet from Costco, I think you're going to run into problems. Eat with diversity. And, you know, if you buy into the, you know, vegetables are going to kill you, we have other issues. You know, the Paul Saladino carnivore doc, you know, it just kind of negates everything. You just cook the vegetables, you know, like all of the, you know, argument he has about defense just go away once you cook the vegetables.
Yeah. I'm surprised you don't have anything on the Liver King in this thing.
No, whatever.
Or organ meats.
Whatever the Liver King did, he did to himself. And I don't really view the Liver King. I kind of view him a lot like a cartoon or Captain Caveman. Or
do you think he'll be at the Arnold?
I don't know. I mean, I would imagine. I mean, he this is kind of like the type of place he would show up. And, you know, now he's claiming. I mean, but I don't know, dude. I just think the ridiculousness of what he did. You know, and I don't really care that he took drugs. I mean, we always knew that he did. I don't know who he thought he was fooling. And I'm just amazed that people were like butthurt by, I mean, that's like, you know, us having Jay Cutler on the podcast and him being like, oh, I did it all natural. Like we don't even have to enter that into the discussion.
Okay, Peter Pan.
You know, but it also kills me too on social media when these guys post stuff up. People will be like, oh, steroids. And I'm like, oh my God. Like in professional sports, I bet you we could give and like, you know, 99.99% of the world, every drug on the world, and they're still not going to step on a bodybuilding stage. They're still not going to win a gold medal, and they're still not going to go play in the NFL. If it was that easy, everybody would do it. So, and I guarantee there's people out there that aren't even winning local bodybuilding shows that are taking more drugs than Jay Cutler and these guys. I mean, the Liver King definitely hit the deal. And I wonder if from day one, if he came out and was like, yeah, I take performance enhancing drugs, if it would have diminished his message. But he's kind of a ridiculous dude. And
well, cover up is worse than the crime.
Well, I mean, but he made $100 million. So obviously it was worth it. But he'll probably end up in a class action lawsuit. But I think he's a fool. All right. People tend to eat about 8 to 10 foods, live a little, add some new foods to the list. If this is confusing, go back to the last one, you know, reference of Roy G. Biv and stop be boring. You have to go out and eat for diversity. I do it every time. You know, I look for different types of meat. I look for different cuts. I want to cook different things. I want to have different vegetables. I would eat the exact same thing every single day if I could, but I know that I can't. Like we said, the healthiest people on the planet can eat the most diverse diet. So you have to test that and be constantly pushing that out. All right, next one. Eat at least 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight daily. Take 5 to 10 grams of creatine daily, 8 to 12 grams of salt daily. For me, for most people, it's 3 to 5, but I do more than that. Sleep 8 hours a day. Lift weights 3 to 5 times a week. Remember to take time daily to feel the sun in your face and the wind in your hair. Rinse and repeat, and add consistency, man. Every time, I talked about rinse and repeat with the consistency of the speed of light. Every time it's measured, it comes out. And this is pretty fascinating. Every time they measure the speed of light, it comes out exactly, 299,792,458 meters per second, or 671 million miles per hour. This is consistency in the universe. All right, the next one is, when injuries present themselves, find a way to pivot your training and add a new movement, implement, or piece of equipment into your arsenal. I did a consult the other day with a 43-year-old dad with a recent hip replacement. His hip was getting really tired during squatting, so we discussed maybe going to a box, maybe adding in a leg press, or doing some other things to help him continue to progress. And he was kind of shocked that I would, oh my God, you know, I mean, we talk about, you know, heavy compound movements and being able to squat in this. And I'm like, yeah, for healthy individuals, you're 43 years old with a hip replacement. My goal is to try to get you to like 63, 73, 83. And if, you know, a hip lasts 20 years, we might have maybe two in our arsenal. So I don't necessarily want you to start wearing that hip out. So you are now in a special case population, and we got to find a way to continue to put on muscle and develop. So it could be blood flow restriction training. It could be a leg press. You could be squatting off a box, anything we can do. And you have to be able to make that pivot and realize you're not a healthy 18-year-old anymore. You're a 43-year-old with a hip replacement, and we need you to try to last as long as we can. When life throws you an audible, be flexible, sidestep, and find a way to keep working. The trick is to not stop. Don't ever stop training. Next one, movement and technique matter. Nobody intentionally wants to move like shit. Some people just have greater attention to detail. Slow down. It matters.
Yeah. I think grindstone's a good way to cover those last two. Because then we get the opportunity. You owe 2 mandatory days a week of weightlifting. And then work in the optional based off of time availability, equipment, goal. Providing a training solution for accomplishing these. So if somebody's presenting excuses or, you know, looking at these lessons for inspiration, there's actionable item within grindstone.
Yeah. All right. You like this one, McQuilkin? Never wear flip-flops to a bar unless the bar is on the sand or you can hear the waves breaking while drinking a tropical drink with an umbrella.
I think about that one every Friday night.
Always dress like you have to fight your way out. And it's hard to fight in flip-flops and a hoodie. So, as I've told you, the 2 best ass-kickings I've ever seen was a dude in flip-flops and another dude who got into a bar fight with a hoodie, and they pulled the hoodie over the top like a
freaking hockey jersey style.
And as the guy was holding, as he pulled the hoodie over, he was holding the hoodie closed. And literally, like the guy's arms were tied, the hoodie was there, and the guy just got peppered with like 4,000 punches. Like, I've never seen an ass beating like that. I mean, the guy got kicked in the stomach. Like, he did. It was bad. So flip-flops, hoodie, don't wear those. All right, next one. Know how to cook a steak. Invest in a nice set of cast iron pans and learn to do a solid reverse sear. Be able to cook a steak in a few different ways to impress your friends who also know how to cook a steak. If you're going to cook a steak and you're going to have people over, you're not cooking steak for the bunch of ladies. Hopefully a bunch of dudes come over because guys appreciate that. They want to see at least the guys I hang out with. So being able to cook this, right? Nobody cooks bomb ass steaks for ladies. We do it for our boys. Also, don't show up to somebody's house or a barbecue empty handed. Once
that's
you arrive,
a good one.
Ask to help and be the type of guest that gets invited back. If someone is cooking, then you better be helping or offer to clean up. Don't be that house guest that does nothing. Next one. Confidence comes from having done the work. If you've done the work required to be the best, then you have the bravado to exhibit it, and it's honest. Nothing is worse than false bravado. It's disingenuous. If you want to play on the biggest stage, do the work required to be there.
Yes, that applies to cooking steaks as well. Do the work.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of interesting, and I thought about this in, you know, in relation to like, you know, boxing, fighting, even MMA, even jiu-jitsu, you know, some of the grappling stuff, you know, the guys, there's two types of dudes. You know, there's, you know, the Conor McGregors, the Gordon Ryans, the guys that are just kind of these like over the top pompous pricks, but they go out and don't get beat and they match it. And the bravado that they're creating and pushing out, it's not disingenuous. I mean, you know, if you're undefeated and you've done that for 60 plus matches and, you know, you have an undefeated boxing record, Mike, you have the ability to be Floyd Mayweather and to go out and have some bravado. Now, the problem is when you're Conor McGregor and you have all that bravado and you get your fucking ass beat, you know, you go out and you kick and you break your leg and he hasn't won anything recently and he's still, you know, cankerous fucking prick out there just talking shit on everybody. It just feels really cheesy. And, you know, the reason that Muhammad Ali was so great was he went out and backed everything up. So if you're going to have bravado, make sure you've done the work. You know, there was a time when Conor McGregor was the best and that time has gone past and he's going to try to come back and rekindle some of it, but he's been away too long. So we'll see how he does.
In Roadhouse, because he's an actor.
Goddamn. I will gladly go watch Roadhouse again. I hope it's not like that.
Total off, Recall?
No, Red Dawn.
Well, I mean, the list can go on. Total Recall, Red Dawn.
Okay, Red Dawn was an amazing movie, and then they remade it with Chris Hemsworth and some other actors, and they shouldn't have called it Red Dawn. What terrible.
Just like Point Break, Total Recall. We can continue on. Just call it something else. It's still good,
yeah,
but it's not great.
The Point Break remake, I liked. It just, the fact that it was called Point Break was the bigger problem.
Yeah. It was a completely different story. Just change the names, call it Breaking Point, and move on.
All right. Let me switch hands with this. All right. The next one is be a fan of humanity. Be excited to see the best in the world step on the biggest stage and compete at the highest level and have their best performance. Root for it. Demand it. Nothing is better than being part of a legend. I'll just give you an example. Recently, we got to see Tommy Fury fight Jake Paul. That was big in the media recently. I watched the clips. I mean, like, Jake Paul's not a bad boxer. Tommy Fury's not a bad boxer, but yet, you know, as I think it was, I can't remember who the commentator said, you know, has probably the weakest 8-0 record in the history of boxing, you know, that, you know, Jake Paul's got a better record. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting that you have these guys who are, you know, celebrities, YouTubers, you know, like didn't come up through the ranks, cutting their teeth boxing, kind of found a different way. You know, the fact that Tommy Fury has, you know, when they talk about him, they don't really mention him as a professional boxer. He was on some like Erotic Island or Temptation Island. He was a reality TV deal.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so that was kind of his claim to fame, and that the fact that his older brother is heavyweight champ, but, you know, isn't necessarily a world-class boxer by any means, but has amassed an 8-0 record. So, very interesting. Have scars and tattoos. Each one tells a story. People with stories are more interesting and captivating, right? Next one, be able to tell a story. If you can't tell a story, either practice till you can or find somebody that can teach you how to tell a story. Nothing worse than sitting around with a bunch of people or being at a party or different places and not having an interesting story to tell and watching people not tell stories well. So know how to captivate an audience, learn how to tell a story.
Well, 10 years of podcasting.
Well, I always go back to when we made TC do his elevator pitch. So TC was one of our interns. Was young, he needed to be developed, and one of the ways we mentored him was helping him put together a elevator pitch so when he met people to introduce himself. And there was humor in this, and he gave up and absolutely bombed it. And then we stood up and off the cuff told his story better than him, yeah, because we know how to tell a story. And every week, and maybe Fig it wasn't every week, but it was pretty often,
Newton,
we would have him come in and be like, all right, tell us the intro. Give us the elevator pitch. And
I'm sure he can do it right now.
Oh, I guarantee if I called him right now and I'd be like, give me your elevator pitch, he could knock it out. But he did well. And he's made jokes about it that, like, you know, people are like, oh, where are you from? And he slips right into it. And I was like, great, you have to have that. Avoid petty people and petty arguments. They're a time suck. They are the thirst trapped. they are thirst traps designed to fake engagement. Be authentic. I watch this all the time on social media where people fight these straw man arguments, or they find like one minor detail that I didn't necessarily know was something that we had to argue about. I'll just give you an example, not to, you know, cast stones, but like knees over toes. The fact that, you know, the knees over toes guys claiming that nobody ever squatted with their knees over their toes was kind of a straw man argument. I mean, there are people that were talking about a vertical shin. That comes more from the Louis Simmons camp, you know, of box squatting. But every time you sprint and run, your knees go over your toes. We've been preaching a positive shin angle for years because it, you know, it's everything we do. It's a within change direction, universal athletic position, everything. The knees have to go over the toes. So that was an interesting one that guy threw a stake in the ground and ended up on Joe Rogan. And, you know, now anybody talks about squatting knees over his toes, he's kind of drawn a circle around that. I mean, we see it all the time with training, with everything where, you know, there are arguments being made on things that I didn't know we had to argue about. But maybe that just shows my age or the fact that maybe I'm not very good at the social media thing. Be a craftsman. Whether that involves working with wood, metal, or the human mind or body, craft something that inspires. I like to weld and build trucks. I like to work on the land. I like to improve upon it. I like to lift weights and be strong. I like to read. I like to think. I like to reflect and write. I like to work with athletes to help them find better versions of themselves. I like to learn. And learning involves humbling yourself to be a student. Moving between master, journeyman, and student is a show of strength. I love being a father and seeing my children grow tall. I view my tribe of power athlete as my people, and it gives me strength and hope.
So like craftsman, something you can use your hands, not TikTok craft.
No, I really think it's whether it's crafting, you know, people, because I think that's what we do at Power Athlete. I think we craft people. Well,
yes.
Training programs, through podcasts.
We build hammers.
Yeah.
We're in the business.
And, you know, like I like to work on the land. I like to try to improve upon my property. I want to improve upon myself, whether it be my physical, whatever it is. I'm in this constant state of evolution, trying to improve upon myself and those around me. And I think it doesn't just limit yourself to like, oh, I like to woodwork. I like to weld. I like to build stuff. Like, I think that should extend to every part of your life. You know, that if you're the project, if those around you, they're the project, I think there has to be a burning desire to continue to improve yourself and those around you and your surroundings. This is more of a personal one, but I loved playing in the NFL. While I was playing, I refused to admit that I loved it. I was too afraid that it would be taken away in a single breath and I'd be heartbroken and I'd be sad. So I lived with a foot in both the present and the future of what could be. And this caused me to be antsy and anxious. As I was always looking to the future instead of living in the moment and really ever allowing myself to enjoy it. If I learned one thing in life, it is to live in the moment and enjoy the small things that make this life magical. I had the greatest opportunity to play a game that I loved. I loved everything about it. And I never could admit it to myself because I was so like petrified that it'd just be stolen from me because I wasn't the master of my own destiny. You know, injury or you know, general managers or coaches or all these other people really dictate your future with this thing. And instead of looking at it like only control the things I can control, have a great time, enjoy it. And when it's gone, you're going to do something else. That didn't happen until later in my career where I thought, fuck it. You know, I'll do this as long as I can until I can't do it and I'll go do something else. But early on, that was a huge realization. And I'm sad that I didn't allow myself to enjoy it more while I was there. The next one is craft a saying. Have a mantra. Believe in something so fiercely that it inspires others to make shirts and paint it on a wall like a mural.
I love that one.
So, I mean, it's cool to have walked into gyms and seen things that I've said, like move the dirt, you know, training's a lot like moving a big pile of dirt. Some days you get a shovel, some days you get a spoon. Seeing that stenciled on people's walls, seeing tattoos of it and seeing it on t-shirts is pretty neat. It's neat to have said something that inspires people.
Yeah. It's okay. Big.
You are the sum of the people that you hang out with. So have an interesting circle. If it sucks, change it.
Yeah, that's a great one. And I mean, that leads to back to and connects to the petty people. So essentially, like, they're going to bring you down.
Yeah.
This is the challenge. Like,
it's
when you're
a crab bucket.
When exactly, dude, when you're on a coaching a team or leading a team or on a team, and then this one person plants this negative seed, it starts to just pull people down around it. You know, cancer is a strong word, but it certainly does infect the attitude.
It's rust.
Rust.
You know, instead of cancer. Like, I always hated that term when people are like, oh, he's a cancer on the team. Because cancer, you can't fix. You just have to cut it out. Rust, you can actually sand down, and you can put rust, you know, inhibitor on.
Suggesting just like, running this individuals that are...
No, like, I think you can... So you can stop rust, and you can fix it, and you can paint it, you can make it look nice. So, like, there's rust repair. There is no cancer repair. You have to remove cancer. You have to remove healthy tissue with bad tissue. So maybe there's two different deviations where, like, is he rust? Are we rusting? Or are we cancer and we got to fucking start over? So
yeah, maybe can their attitude change? Mm-hmm. Can we bring some self-awareness?
Yeah.
Or is it?
You fucking get the fuck out. The next one. Don't hold your fan club meetings in a phone booth. Bob Wellborn. So my dad always told me, remember, as great as you think you are, don't ever, if you have to hold your fan club meetings in a phone booth, you know you're pretty far, which means if you're your biggest fan, you got fucking issues. So that my dad told me that. At the end of the day, ultimately, we're on our own. Nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's coming to save you. You have to learn how to make yourself content and find peace. And you have to find the internal strength to lift yourself up when you are down. All the, you know, pep talks and memes and people around you telling you how great you are. It doesn't matter. You have to be okay with you. You are the one that makes it happen. Like, I always love where, you know, I think it's like the various Instagram deals where, like, they'll do the voiceovers and they're like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. You know, and then they're like, transformation. It's true. Like, you have, I don't plug in on this stuff. You also don't have 11-year-old girls who, like, think memes are hilarious and show me these all day. So, these are some quotes from... I don't know. They're attributed to Ragnar Lothbrok. We watched the show of Ragnar on Netflix and really enjoyed it. I pulled some quotes that I liked from him, which is, I don't believe in the gods' existence. Man is the master of his own fate, not the gods. The gods are man's creation to give answers that they are too afraid to give themselves. So I think it's easier just to say, you know, it's God's will, or to kind of push this off as some greater divine, but at the end of the day, you know, God helps those who helps themselves, which comes from the Bible. Iron sharpens iron. You know, all these different quotes through the Bible are about you taking ownership of yourself and making your own destiny. The other one I liked from Ragnar is, don't waste your time looking back. You are not going that way. So, I mean, I think about those guys, you know, sailing out on boats into the unknown. Don't look back. We're not going that way. It's going forward. Keep your head forward. You know, keep your face to the wind. This is another one that actually my wife sent me that was, I can't attribute it to anybody even though I searched, but it was, never feel sorry for raising dragon slayers in a time when there are actual dragons.
It's probably Jordan Peters.
I don't know. It would have been too easy to attribute it to Jordan if he said it, because Jordan has a lot of quotable stuff. But I couldn't find, I even entered it into ChatGPT and it couldn't tell me. Here's another one. When you work a muscle to failure, you maximize muscle unit recruitment, including those high threshold units. Recruiting more muscle units is theoretically a way to boost strength and hypertrophy gains. So the idea of lifting heavy weights and recruiting more motor units through not only lifting heavy weights, but through compensatory acceleration, or even, you know, using EMS devices, all of those contribute to strength and hypertrophy gains. Next one. Most people do not know how big a tree is until you cut it down. It's a human tendency not to value something until it's under assault or lost. That's a kind of a scary one, too.
Well, now that you're cutting up falling down trees, I think that one came to you pretty naturally.
Mm. I'm a little different, though, in that I don't need
beautiful
to.
Oak trees, unfortunately.
I know. I don't need to cut a tree down to know how big it is. You know, one of my favorite adventures was going to the giant sequoias and seeing the redwoods in California, standing there and seeing these trees that have, you know, stood the test of time, that were there thousands of years before allegedly Jesus was born. And I don't need to cut them down to know how big they are. But when you see them, like there's old pictures of people that would cut these things down, you'll see like them fall these trees, and then the guys will stand on top of the tree. And from that moment, you get an idea of how big the redwoods really are. Once you see somebody or a car or a truck next to them, they're massive. And I'm always sad to think that people cut those trees down. If you don't learn to read and write to the best of your ability, you will never learn to think. Adrian Cragen, UC Berkeley law professor, was also the individual I got to meet on my recruiting trip to Cal, and he's since passed away. About 2005, he passed away, former dean of the UC Berkeley Law School. That one has always been extremely impactful for me, because when I asked him what I should major in when I went to college, he recommended rhetoric because it would allow me to learn to read and write to the best of my ability. And he said, if you want to go to law school, you have to learn to read and write. And then we kind of went on a little bit, and he said, if you don't learn to read and write, you'll never learn to think. And that was impactful, because I thought, as I thought more about that, think about all the people that you encounter that never write anything down. I mean, that's probably what's allowed Jordan Peterson to be so successful, is that he sits down and he writes and he thinks and he works through these different problems. And once he has, you know, thought and read and wrote about them, then he understands how he needs to present them and think about these things. So I think that's extremely impactful. But if you don't read and write, you're not going to learn to think.
What did Cragen think of Twitter?
Well, he died in 2005.
Oh.
So when I met him in 1994, he was already in like his late 80s. So I think he was like 92 or 94 when he died. So he was probably in his late 80s. I mean, you know, this would have been before the advent of the internet. 2005 would have been really before the advent of Facebook or even social media. All right, next one. When training, avoid the pitfall of junk volume. That's what leads to injuries and overuse. So we see people that, just because they don't know how to program or don't necessarily know how to train, just stack volume on volume to try to make up for not really understanding that you have to drive as hard as you can. And if you're looking to increase strength and hypertrophy, you got to do it without leaving reps in reserve. You got to push the boundaries. You got to create mechanical tension, and you got to work towards mechanical failure. So muscle tension and mechanical failure are keys. All right. This is another, probably should be stenciled on a wall somewhere. I'm sure it is. A society grows great when old men plant trees in which shade they will never sit. It's a Greek proverb. So as our oak tree went down, I got to dig out the stump. And so I reached out about buying some other oak trees, and I want to put two up. And the guy that came out to give me the assessment was like, why are you going to plant these oak trees? Like, you'll never see them grow. And I looked at him and I'm like, a society grows great when old men, or even moderately old young men like myself, middle-aged men, plant trees in which shade they'll never sit. Like, I'm not interested in me seeing these trees, because I'm not planting them for myself. I'm planting them for the next generation. If we're only planting trees for ourselves, then who plants trees, right? Like, they take, you know, 50, 100 plus years. I'm expecting that these trees will be here 100 years from now, and maybe we'll put a plaque or a monument. Maybe we'll put a little bench or something to memorize or commemorate when that tree fell. So maybe I'll leave the stump. I was thinking it'd be neat to like cut the stump, make a little seat, and maybe like pound a plaque into it, talking about like, this tree fell and we planted it here and we did this. The only thing I worry about is, who knows, maybe in 50 years they've ripped all that out and just built homes and it goes away. But you can't worry.
Don't
about
look back, stuff. John. You're looking forward, brother.
Yeah, we'll go forward. This is another one from Marcus Aurelius. Waste no more time arguing about what a good man should be. Be one. So, I mean, that's another kind of straw man arguments we run into so much, where everybody knows. Everybody knows what's right and wrong. Everybody knows what's good and bad. And everybody knows what it means to be a good man. We make a division on this, and we make decisions based on our own personal growth or personal mindset, or just when we say, fuck it. And I think there's a lot of arguing about it, but you know, don't argue about what a good man is. Just be a good man. We all know what it is. And if you don't, then I don't know. You need to increase your circle, or you got to go back and, you know, hope for better parents.
Well, that's impossible.
Yeah.
But plenty of lessons learned.
Yeah. The next one is life is a shipwreck, but we must not forget to sing in the lifeboats. Voltaire. So life's hard.
Explain that one.
So if your life is a shipwreck, right? So, I mean, obviously it's going down and you have to abandon everything to get into the lifeboats. So it basically means when the ship is going down and everything is terrible around you, always remember to sing and have a good time, because, you know, eventually you'll be saved. So I think the problem is, you know, with the shipwreck, you know, everybody feels like they got to ride it to the bottom of the ocean. You'll sing in the lifeboats, find a way to get out of it, pivot, do something, pull the ripcord, and remember to have a smile while you're doing it. Here's another one. And I've done this forever. And it wasn't until about 2011 the research actually came to support it. But it was actually an old wives' tale. I think that old man John Papadakis taught us about how to cook a steak, which is you have to rub your steaks with extra virgin olive oil. So before you cook a steak, you always rub it down with olive oil and then you season it. And so John Papadakis, who owned Papadakis Taverna, his son Tasso is the one that got me into lifting weights, and he owned a taverna, which was a restaurant in San Pedro. We would go over there for dinner because he would cook dinner about 3 o'clock after school, because then he would leave and go to the restaurant. And when he cooked the steaks, he always rubbed them with olive oil. And the steaks were excellent. So I always rub my steaks with olive oil and then I season them. Come to find out that if you rub your steaks with olive oil, the antioxidants in the extra virgin olive oil will reduce the formation of carcinogens on the meat surface and effectively make it healthier. So it was in 2011 that research came out, and I was like, fuck, I knew it. I've been doing this forever just because I thought the steaks were better, and it's how John Papadakis cooked it. Then I have another one. Use salt daily. I was pushing for 8+ grams, but for the average person, 3 to 5 grams. I put it in my water. I put it in my coffee. I salt the hell out of my food. And since we've been over-salting everything, I feel dramatically better. And then the last one is compensatory acceleration is still the greatest method for improving athletic performance that I've ever encountered. And that method of compensatory acceleration that states as mechanical advantage increases, so does speed, was probably one of the deciding factors for allowing me to go play in the NFL. Learning to accelerate the weight past, you know, I mean, when you think about people lift weights, they drive out of the hole and then they kind of slow down. I actually thought the exact opposite. Old man Zhang is compensatory acceleration. His weight is as mechanical advantage increases, so does bar speed. The idea that I want you to break the weights. I want you to fucking hurt them. I want you to move violently in everything you do. It was probably the greatest factor looking back that allowed me to translate what I did in the weight room onto the field.
Yeah, teaching the seminars, that was one of my favorite aha moments that we got to drive home for people teaching the squat.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just that bounce out of the bottom where you need to work. I mean, it was punching, it was finishing through the squat. That always fun. And I feel it's not often taught.
Well, because so I was never taught this when I played football. But the lesson that I was taught in the weight room with compensatory acceleration, you know, coming from Fred Hatfield, I ended up translating it onto the field. And now all of a sudden when I went to go hit somebody with my hands or my head or whatever I was doing, was I wasn't just trying to hit them. I was trying to accelerate through them. I was trying to punch my hands 4 to 6 inches through their chest. Mm-hmm. When I hit an individual, I wasn't just trying to hit them. I was trying to drive my head through them to the back. So the idea or the method or really just the practice of compensatory acceleration that I developed in the squat and the pull and everything I did, I was able to like have this kind of epiphany where I was like, oh, well, what if I use compensatory acceleration on the football field? When I take a step and I drive my head, I'm driving my head and body as mechanical advantage increases, so does speed, instead of just like moving as fast as I can and then, you know, hitting and stopping. No, driving through. And, you know, that was a reason that when the scouting reports came out, they were like, these guys' hands are deadly. He's going to fucking hurt you if he hits you. You know, like his hands are fast. I mean, we always had a really good, you know, it was always cool to hear, you know, Strahan and some of the guys that I played against always, you know, joke with me and be like, hey, you should hear what they say about you in our defensive meetings. And so that was to me, a greater indicator of my success than anything else. And I really think that that stemmed from, you know, a decade of using compensatory acceleration from the time I was 14. Now, compensatory acceleration doesn't happen until you've developed technique. And something I was talking with Jim last night about is it like for you to be able to really harness it, you have to be able to move from point A to point B with efficiency. Mm-hmm. And that takes time. It takes reps. You don't learn it doing just singles, doubles, and triples. You know, there's an earlier part where all of a sudden, you know, hey, I'm going to use a linear progression. I'm going to use fives. And then all of a sudden when you ditch into the new, you know, once Bedrock. That ends and with using Bedrock, and then now all of a sudden you transition to another program, we're going to increase the reps. You know, there's, I had a guy the other day be like, how come there's not more singles, doubles and triples in Jack Street? And I'm like, dude, if you're in that program and you can squat 6 to 8 heavy reps, I guarantee, you know, we can turn it on very easily and have you do some singles, doubles and triples if you're trying to periodize for, you know, powerlifting meet.
Come to feel strong.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants their program to have everything. How come there's not sprinting in Jack Street? Well, we do that in feel strong. How come it's not flexible like grindstone? Because that's grindstone. How come there's not a running template in this? We do that in hammer. So everybody wants a program that does everything. But as the old adage says, if you the individual that tries to sit on every seat sits on no seats.
Yes. Secret squirrel that may have been in the 42 things.
Don't secret squirrel. You know, if you're trying to train for power and speed, you need a dedicated program that puts power and speed forward. You know, more plyos, more jumps. I mean, we've been using some French contrast in Field Strong. If your job or your desire is to just pack on thick slabs of muscle and to be strong, which I think is different than maybe some other people's programs. But with Jack Street, what I've always wanted is for people to be strong and look strong. You know, the age old Louis Simmons, like big is just big. Now you want to be big and strong, and big ain't strong. So we want to be jacked. We want to be strong, and we want to look like we lift weights because we actually do move heavy weights from point A to point B. So those are
quickly.
Yeah, quickly with violence.
With violence.
So that's about 40 plus things. I forget the exact number. We worked through them all, but some are very personal to me. You know, obviously life lessons, but and then some quotes, especially from, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Voltaire and other ones that I felt were very, very impactful. But you know, that number, I think it was 20 or 21. That I really love playing the NFL, and it's been very hard. It's been 10 plus years. Really thinking about this and, you know, talking with my kids and just being able to talk to younger players or people that are, you know, on the cusp of doing this or being like you don't get to do this for a long time. It's a very short time to do this. And you have a very finite, like set amount of time to earn a reputation and to really just craft out the type of player you want to be remembered at and one that you're going to remember, because you're going to do this for a very short period in your life and you're going to live many, many lifetimes after this. You have to be happy with the body of work you've done. And if you leave something out there or you don't craft it well, or you just don't do it the way you should, it's going to be regret. And regret's fucking painful. For me, I don't regret at all. I mean, I regret some of the things. Like I shouldn't have listened to my agent and fucking got out of Philly. I should have stayed there. I should have, you know, not played hurt when Andy Reid asked me to, you know, some things like that. But I was young and I felt that, you know, people's words meant something, but I should have been an adult and realized that a business is a business. And, man, but I was young and idealistic. So I needed mentorship in that way where I'd been like, because I wouldn't have mentored my son that way. I would have been like, yo, slow your roll. Let's look at this. Let's be smart. Remember, you got a long career. Don't die on the sword of this day, because there's a good chance that this guy's going to come back and not be as honorable as you think he is, which was very different than the information I was told. So with that, realizing that, like, I didn't live with regrets in terms of how I played. I played hurt. I did everything that I should. I regret maybe some of the decisions I made that resulted in, you know, me not getting to play in a Super Bowl, which kind of sucked. But the foresight, or like looking back, to realize that I was so nervous or afraid that it was going to be stolen from me at any moment, that, like, you know, and like I'm sure people go through life like this, like, you know, if only I had tried harder, I would have been successful, right? And is that a cop out, or is it just like a safety mechanism where, like, if I don't really try and it doesn't happen, I won't be upset about the results I didn't get because I didn't really work that hard?
Yeah.
Well, I did the exact opposite. I worked as hard as I could, but mentally in my mind, I like didn't really allow myself to really love and ever say or really just admit to myself how much I enjoy doing my job. I just looked at it like a job. This is what I do. I'm good at it. I'll go out there and I'll do the work. But like mentally, I couldn't cross that bridge. It was a bridge too far. And I think it was because I was afraid that, you know, I mean, one false step or a hit to the back of the leg. I mean, I took a helmet to the shin and fucking broke my leg and thought, shit, it's over here. And I think when that happens, you almost have to, you know, maybe like, I think it's like a defense mechanism. You're almost protecting yourself because you don't want to get hurt, yeah. You know, and the physical pain and the physical injury doesn't bother me. It was the emotional, but you know, now that I look back on it, I'm like, you know what? Everybody's going to be in pain. Everybody's going to have injuries, but very few people ever get an opportunity to stand with their face in the sun for 10 years. And I was fortunate to do it. You know, something I talk to Arash and Victor and the young guys, the BJJ guys we work with, I tell them all the time, I want to see you stand on the biggest stage with the sun in your face. I want you to feel the warmth of greatness. I want you to stand on the biggest and compete against the best and be victorious. And I want you to know that you've done the work to be there, because when that happens, nobody can steal that from you. And it's the greatest feeling in the world. And I want that for you guys. But that's also me having done it, looking back, that sometimes it's hard to explain that to people. I think everybody should have the opportunity. No doubt, not everybody does, because not everybody works as hard or has as many opportunities to it, but it doesn't mean I don't want that for everybody. And that goes back to that humanity quote, you know, be a fan of humanity, want that for everybody. Now, not everybody might not want it, but it doesn't mean I don't want it for you.
Yeah.
So.
And I think our listeners can make a connection with that, with something in their life that they find very important, and don't take advantage of it.
Yeah. Appreciate so I'm going to load that up to Power Athlete. Also put it on Talk to Me, Johnny. And I might need to go back and edit a little bit to kind of clean up the wording a little, and I'll write a little lead in and lead out. But for the most part, those are that's my 10-year. Seems crazy. You know, here we are 10 years, 700 podcasts in here, 2013 on my 42 things.
Surprise, the list's not longer.
It was. it was dramatically longer, and I went back and just started cutting things out because it just felt after a while like it just like I think with anything you write, like there has to be an editing process. Well, you know, and in life too, right? Like, you know, here's the body of work, this is what I'm proud of. So just kind of trimming it back and making it a little more digestible. Less preachy.
Well, there we have it.
Cool. Thanks for tuning in to episode 700 of Power Athlete Radio.
Yes. Hit that subscribe button, leave a review for us. We appreciate any feedback so we can continue to empower and improve. Here's to you.
Here's to you. See ya.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.